radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Hello, everybody. This is Ed Ballum from firehouse.com. And today we have Chief Brian Brown from the South Metro Fire Rescue Authority Fleet Service Bureau in Centennial, Colorado. Chief Brown's an EVT with lots of years of experience, and he's going to talk to us today about high-tech components on apparatus, how to check them out, how to keep them running right, and how to keep our apparatus on the road. Good morning, Chief. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well, Ed. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Chief, can you explain a little bit more about your experience with medium and heavy-duty apparatus, and as you're also an instructor, I understand, so perhaps you can flesh out your resume a little bit for us.
Well, I am. Ed, I've been with the fire service for 22 years, going on 23. I've had the extreme luxury and opportunity to work on what I call both sides of the fence, and that would be starting as a mechanic and then working online as a firefighter, being firefighter certified, as a materials responder, fire instructor one level, ASC certified, EVT certified. I was also the president of the Colorado Fire Mechanics Association for 4 years. We've got several awards from the iChiefs, and we've also got a state award from the governor for the Colorado State Fireship Leadership Award. And, you know, there's many things that I've had the opportunity to do that I think has really enhanced the opportunity for us to be able to perform the job that we do in a shop. Because the way I look at it, Ed, is we're not just doing fleet maintenance or scheduled maintenance. We're actually, what's the one word I'm looking for? And I'm going to have to jump on that. We're doing risk management, Ed.
Yes, I understand. So you've got a lot of experience, and we should listen to what you have to say, I guess, is what bottom line is here. So,
right.
Apparatus today is becoming a real challenge to keep on the road with all the kind of high-tech things going on, and computers and interlocks and black boxes and multiplex systems. Perhaps you can give us a few tips on how apparatus should be maintained and what we can do to keep them working properly.
Well, Ed, let me start with, I just got back from Greeley, Colorado. I spent a week there because I teach a week-long class at Ames Community College, and it's the fire pump and accessory class.
Mm-hmm.
We do about 2 days of classroom to where we go over all the components in a class, and then we spend another 2.5 days actually on the fire ground using a pump test pit and several porta tanks. What we do is we really push safety in the class. A lot of the safety has to do with the documentation. A lot of the safety has to do with the new technology, how to operate the new technology. And a lot of the safety has to do with the fact that we need to exercise and test our components on a regular basis. If we don't do that, then we create a major problem and a major liability, not only with our department, but also with our citizens. There's a lot of things that we put in a class that a lot of departments don't do. And let me just throw out an easy one at you, and that's the NFPA requirement for master intake relief valves.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of departments out there that actually test their master intake relief valves on a regular basis. And, you know, they're really important, especially when you're using a large diameter hose and you have a relay pumper providing water to the first attack pumper, and if something goes wrong, there needs to be a relief valve in the system to protect the firefighters, protect the truck and the components.
That's right.
With that, what we really get into is the electronic pressure governors. A lot of people still use the manual pressure relief valves, and there's a huge difference between using a manual pressure relief valve and an electronic pressure governor.
That's right. Yes, there is. The electronic pressure governors run the speed of the engine, which makes a big difference on how things are work mechanically on the pump side.
They do. With that, Ed, a lot of things we talk about in the class is that there's several interlocks that when you take the truck and you go from road to pump, as soon as you flip that switch, there's several interlocks that the truck has to go through for the throttle to be able to work,
yeah,
for the transmission to go into gear, to be able to lock the transmission into one-to-one ratio so the pump actually works, and for the electronic pressure governor to work. And a lot of people don't understand that if one of those components doesn't work, then the truck is pretty much dead in the water.
Right.
You're not going to be able to get in the cab anymore and actually use the throttle inside the cab.
Right.
And because the electronic pressure governor actually has to communicate to the engine and the transmission. So remember in the old days, Ed, where we used to be able to throw somebody in the cab and you could put a vice grip on a cable and you could operate the old manual engines and old manual pumps? Well,
right,
that part is gone.
Yes. The vernier throttle controls aren't there. The cables aren't there anymore.
That is correct.
Electronic possession sensors and, as you said, the interlocks and digital readouts and signals that are all going through to make the engine and transmission work.
That's right. Now, that's an extreme luxury that we have because you don't have to be as detailed as you used to be when you had to adjust your pressure relief valve and you had to adjust the throttle on a regular basis and so on and so on.
Right.
One component I think that's missing out of it now is with that, when we use everything that's electronic, it's basically just push a button and you're set to go. You can hit the preset button. You're pumping at 165 PSI, if that's what you have it set for.
Right.
And the engineer can just walk away from the truck, and the truck pretty much does its own thing. What I think is missing now is the critical thinking process. So if a guy just has to push a button and walk away, he's done. Whereas before, you always had to be thinking about what you were doing on the truck.
That's right.
So that's why in our department, we have a lot of engineer classes where we go through a lot of different scenarios to where we actually make them think about those things critically, like what would happen if the electronic pressure governor doesn't work? What would happen if the truck doesn't go into pump gear? What would happen if the truck doesn't go into drive? So on and so on. To where you make them think about that and actually try to adapt, improvise, and overcome.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Have you come up with a way to overcome the pressure governor yet? I'm not sure I would know how to do that, honestly.
You know what? There's not many avenues that you can do that, Ed.
I didn't think so.
Go ahead.
No, I didn't think so that there were, but perhaps you can tell us what you found.
If the electronic pressure governor happens to lose power, lose the ground, lose the J139 connection, one of the interlock switches goes bad, if the switch itself in the cab goes bad, or like Seattle had that problem with,
yes,
with the push pads on their Allison transmissions, one of those goes bad, there's a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
A big problem.
So that probably leads us to where you were saying in the written part of the story that this is the package, is that you need to test these things regularly to make sure they work, correct?
You have to.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is a scheduled preventative maintenance program for departments, but when you talk about daily, weekly, and monthly checks, it's an effective tool for all fire departments and all fire personnel. So a well-thought-out daily inspection, weekly inspection, monthly inspection, as well as a scheduled preventative maintenance program, it reduces the breakdowns of the apparatus, reduces the downtime, minimizes the lost crew hours, and actually enhances the performance of your vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And because that is a tool that you need to be able to use, and it needs to perform properly when you're doing your job.
That's right.
So if you have a truck that doesn't start, doesn't stop, doesn't pump, and the ladder doesn't work, then how good is that tool?
Not very.
It's not very good. along with that too, you don't get really good public relations when stuff like that happens.
No, absolutely not. That's the last thing you need is a fire truck not working at a fire scene, and there's rescues to be made and property to be saved, and it's a nightmare.
Right, right. Because just like we'll talk about Boston for a little bit, you know, it's
yes.
something really, really simple like that, to where you lose the brakes on a truck, and there was improper training with that, and then the truck crashes through a wall into the side of a school with an after-school program. That's not real good PR.
No.
And just let me throw one element in there when we're talking about the electronic devices on the truck, is there's a lot of departments that are trained, which I think is extremely hazardous, that if the engineer is in a panic situation, that they're taught to actually apply the service brake, put the transmission in neutral, and just put their foot on the brake. Here's the problem with that, is that when you apply the service brake on the truck, the spring pressure on the truck has less braking force than actually using the air brakes. In addition to that, that Boston Ladder actually had a transmission output retarder.
Right.
When the engineer put the transmission in neutral, that disabled the retarder.
Of course. Yep.
So now you've disabled the retarder. Mm-hmm. You've disabled the transmission, because a lot of times in your own personal vehicle, when you're going down the mountains or you're going down a hill, you can downshift the transmission and help the transmission stop your vehicle in addition
right.
to the brakes.
Yes, using the gear and the back pressure on the engine to hold your car back or your vehicle back.
That is correct.
Yes.
So all those were disabled on that truck, which in turn, you know, was part of the accident,
right.
caused part of the accident.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that is proper training, proper inspections, proper testing, and with the proper training with that is for the engineer or the driver operator to be able to have the proper knowledge to operate that vehicle. The other thing we found too, Ed, is that we have people that actually are rovers from one station to another.
Mm-hmm.
When you do that, you go to a station that you've been around, you show up, and there's a pumper or a ladder truck there that you haven't seen for 6 or 7 months. You need to spend some time with that truck. You need to become intimate with that vehicle.
Right.
So that if you have a call within the next 15 to 20, 30 minutes or an hour, that you know how that vehicle works. You know where all the controls are at. If it has a foam system, you know how to operate the foam system. Even if it has a CAF system,
mm-hmm.
how do I operate the CAF system? How do I operate the ladder? So on and so on. Because I've seen many times to where you'll have a roving engineer that shows up to the department, and he'll just put his gear on the truck, take it out, drive it up, check the pump, park it back in the bay, run in, and have breakfast and a cup of coffee.
Right, right. Thinking, oh, this is just like engine two. This is
exactly.
engine three. And yeah, it may be, but it operates differently.
Yes,
just
it
by
does.
Necessity. Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Right. So getting back to the high-tech components, inspection, familiarity, there was also some talk we did about reporting intermittent problems. If something didn't work this time, it may not work in the future, and it's something that needs to be checked out and serviced, correct?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely correct. We actually have a program in place to where everybody has the opportunity to provide what's called a fleet service request online. That goes into our intranet program, to where we're able to pull that up on a daily basis. They're listed as next preventative maintenance, routine, or urgent. The first ones that we look at in the morning are ones that are all urgent, obviously. because if it has to deal with the engine, the pump, the ladder, the steering, or the suspension and brakes, those are critical issues, along with the emergency lighting.
Right.
And it's extremely important for the firefighters to be able to properly communicate with the shop personnel. And it's also important for the shop personnel to be able to communicate to the firefighters, because there's different terms that are used on both sides. So when they do that, they do their daily check, and they find something, we'll have them write it up. And then in addition to that, if it's a real critical issue, then they'll actually call us after they write it up. We'll send a mechanic to the station, and we'll try to do everything we can to keep that vehicle in service.
Yeah.
If we can't, then it's out of service, and we'll have to switch them into a reserve unit. So it's extremely important for them to do that on a daily basis. The other part of that, too, Ed, is the documentation.
Yeah.
We talked about documentation before.
Yes.
When they document that, and the mechanics document their notes, and they put their work orders together, and we do our pump tests, our aerial inspections, so on and so on, those become legal documents when they go into the vehicle file.
Right.
It's extremely important that everything is well documented, because if there's a liability issue that takes place within our department based on an accident that we may have had, which God forbid something like that happens to us, then we need to have all our ducks in a row. Because if there's a death or if there's any property damage involved, then what they'll do is the state or the feds may quarantine that vehicle. They'll come in and they'll pull all my files.
Yeah.
They'll take my computer, and they're going to sort through everything.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to look at every detail. And that's one thing that we have to pay very strict attention to, is that we properly document, file, and report all these items that happen on these trucks. There's a time that it becomes extremely mundane to be able to do that.
Right.
And it becomes routine, and it's boring, but a lot of people don't realize how often those are looked at, and when it becomes a liability issue, what's going to happen if it's not properly documented.
Mm-hmm. It's probably like emergency medicine. If it's not documented, it didn't happen.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and the last thing you want to do is be justifying your actions and saying, well, we did it, and it's not written down. That's not a good position to be in.
And that's exactly right. And I think you and I may have discussed this before, but there was a time that we have a maintenance check sheet that the mechanics use in-house when they perform a scheduled PM on one of the vehicles. On the backside of that sheet is a little box that says test drive. So when they're done with their preventative maintenance, they need to test drive the unit, and they need to do a quality control inspection on it. There were times that I was pulling those sheets out of the work orders, and I found about 5 in a row that were not checked. So I got everybody together,
mm-hmm.
and I explained to them how important it was to do that, because that's a legal document. And I explained to them, if you're sitting on the stand in court and the lawyer asked you, did you test drive that vehicle, your answer is going to be yes, I did.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to say, no, you didn't. You didn't check the box.
It's not checked off. It didn't happen. Right.
It didn't happen. That's exactly right.
Right.
So since we talked about that, I pulled a lot of those inspection sheets out, and every one of them is checked now. So the guys really paid attention to that, and they didn't realize the impact that it could have on us and them also.
Right.
Because if something like that happens, they may be held personally accountable for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So to hit it home, inspections are critically important to documenting the performance of any apparatus. And yes, please go ahead.
Mm-hmm. You're right, and the key word there was critically perform. You just don't want to do it sitting at the breakfast table over a cup of coffee and just pencil whipping your document. The people actually need to be out there and doing it. They need to be touching it, feeling it. One of the best ways to inspect your vehicle, believe it or not, is when the guys actually wash the rig.
Sure.
Because when you wash the truck, what are you looking at? You're looking at every detail on that truck. You're looking at the handles, the gauges, the doors, the glass, the mirrors, the tires, the wheels. You're looking at everything. And a lot of people don't realize that.
Right, right. Well, when you have your commercial driver's license test, they make you check lug nuts, rims, cracks, tires, tread depths, any gouges in the treadwear. So when you're washing a thing, that's a good time to run your hand over things and just look at things and document them if they need to be fixed or if there's something wrong.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's exactly right.
Yep. Now, we didn't talk at all about all the different kinds of things that are on apparatus these days. I think we mentioned there were like 8 computers on many apparatus that are built to today's specifications. Perhaps you could just walk down through some of those computers and what they do, just so people have an idea of how complex these apparatus are today.
Right. Well, let's just talk about one of our new pumper tenders that we have.
Sure.
It has a load manager, which is technically an electronic control device. We have an engine computer.
Right.
An ECU or an ECM. Also, there's an ECU for the transmission. There's an ABS computer. That's an electronic control device. We have an electronic pressure governor.
Mm-hmm.
We also have multiplexing with a brain in it. The brain is actually the control center for the multiplexing.
Yes.
With that.
It would be like the interface screen found in the cab, correct?
That is correct.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In addition to that, you have multiple nodes on the truck that communicate to various devices on the vehicle, and those nodes get that information from that control center. The control center gets its information from whatever switch that you're going to push or whatever device you're using on the truck.
Mm-hmm.
With that, when we can get into the CAF system, so now we're talking about either Foam Pro or the Hercules CAF system.
That's right.
Or the Husky Foam system and Hales Foam system with that where they have electronic devices.
Right.
So you got an electronic control head. You actually have another control head where you can actually calibrate the foam, and then you can choose Class A or Class B if you're using Class B foam on your trucks.
Right.
So everything's gone electronic now.
Yeah.
In addition to that, when you talk about the ladder, you have multiplexing on that, mm-hmm. and there's several sensors and electronic systems on just the ladders and the platforms themselves. Another thing, too, Ed, is that when you're looking at automatic nozzles on platforms, or large ladders, the electronic control devices now you can operate remotely because you have a remote control device where you can actually stand on the ground and you can operate that nozzle. Well, when you think about it, that's an electronic device because the automatic nozzle actually has a circuit board in it.
That's right. Yes, it has a servo and a circuit board. And
that's right.
You can even get them with radio frequency control, so you've got another transmitter and receiver there. So
that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So, and then in addition to that, we're going to add a computer and a GPS system to the truck so that we have a data 911 computer with a 15-inch monitor in the trucks that actually communicates to our dispatch center that has a CAD system that monitors all the trucks. And when they have a call, they have a 911 call come in, they can actually send the closest unit to that call.
Yeah.
And they can actually see all those trucks on their CAD board and on their computer screen.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, it's truly amazing. Before, you just grab the mic on the radio and you talk on a radio and you'd look at your map book and
the three-ring binder.
Everything has changed. In addition to that, we have printers on the trucks, too.
Oh, yeah.
And with the Data 911 computer, they also carry a Toughbook, a laptop.
Yes. Yeah. So I think we far exceeded eight by the time that we just talking up here, and we didn't even mention about the seatbelt monitoring devices and the black box event recorders, and who knows. So it sounds like there's a lot of the central nervous system and the wires and the brains and everything else like that. There's a lot of stuff going on there, and for the average firefighter, it sounds like the best they can do is to make sure it all works and report it when it doesn't, and leave it to the EVTs to diagnose and repair.
That's right.
Is that a fair assessment?
I totally agree. Even with the EVTs have to know how to properly diagnose it. There was one time I was at a training, and I saw a level 3 EVT from another department actually walking over to a truck that had a multiplexing system with a regular test light. And I actually had to stop him and said, you can't use those anymore. If you use that test light in that multiplexing system with the computer, you're going to burn the system up. Do not use that anymore. You have to have a digital volt ohmmeter. There's multiple devices that the guys have to be able to have to be able to use. They have to have a laptop computer with the essential software system on it to be able to diagnose those. Things have totally changed. So even then, even though they're certified, they still need to be up to date and properly trained on the devices and the systems on those trucks.
So another lesson learned there is make sure you know and trust the people that are going to be working on your apparatus and make sure they have the qualifications to do so.
That's right. What I would also recommend to Ed is that if you send your trucks out for repairs and you use a local vendor, I would actually ask that vendor for their mechanic certificates and what level they're trained at.
Yes, yes. And that protects your investment on your apparatus and also downtime from being out of service.
It does.
A red flag truck is not doing anyone any good, any place.
That's
so
right.
Making sure the person knows what they're doing keeps that out of the shop.
That's right.
So that's a good point. Good point, Chief. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Are there other areas that we should talk about, things that we didn't cover that you can think of that we should pass along to our listeners?
Well, Ed, there's a multitude of things that we could actually talk about, because we could talk about braking systems, we could talk about ladder systems, we could talk all day on foams and pumps and the different trucks that are coming out now, especially looking at Pierce's Puck. They call it the pump under cab or the Pierce Ultimate configuration. I'm pulling Pierce out of the hat because it's a very unique truck that actually has pump and roll capability and no longer actually has a quote midship pump in it that has a pump transmission. Mm-hmm. It's a direct drive off the engine. So even that part of the components are changing on the trucks. It's a very unique design, and it's extremely, extremely user-friendly, not only for the firefighters, but also for the mechanics.
Right.
It's a very unique device. So there's a lot of other things that we could get into. I'm not sure if you have the time for that, but we could certainly do that in the future.
Sure.
And I would be happy to, if you want to just talk about individual components, we could focus strictly on those.
Yes, yes. Well, okay, Chief. Well, we've covered a lot of ground today, and I think that the takeaways from this are probably use it, inspect it, report it, are probably the three key areas that I think that firefighters really ought to focus on to make sure their apparatus performs the way it needs to every time. Would that be a fair assessment?
You're exactly right. Those are the three main components.
Yeah.
And they're extremely critical that they're done on a regular basis, not just on hit and miss.
Right, right. And that's the most important thing. Even if you're a small rural volunteer department, make sure the equipment works, probably more so than the urban areas where they're used every day, because that's atrophy and neglect can creep in pretty quickly if we don't keep our eyes open and really check out things. And
that is correct. And Ed, we've talked about the trucks, but they also need to be focused on the equipment that's on those trucks.
Yes.
Like if you have a generator on the truck, does the generator work? Mm-hmm. Have you also checked the generator? You have your rescue tools, your extrication tools. Do they work properly? You have your positive pressure ventilation fans. Do they work properly? So on and so on. So it's not just about the truck, although the truck is the mobile toolbox that carries all that stuff, and
right.
it's extremely important that it gets there, but everything else needs to work too.
Of course. Otherwise, you've got a toolbox you've brought to the scene with tools that don't work in it. It would be the equivalent of maybe a screwdriver with a broken blade or the jaws broken off of your pliers or something like that. You've got
That's
to
exactly
out if
right.
You can't use it.
That's
so.
Exactly right. Yeah, imagine you have a big Craftsman toolbox with all these tools in it, and you get there and nothing works.
Right,
and pretty much you're just walking around with a fishing box, a tackle box.
Right.
So.
And that's not the time to find out when things aren't working.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
And it creates a lot of stress. There's a lot of stress with the firefighters when stuff like that doesn't work on the fire ground.
Right, right. You've got the incident commander saying what's happening and the firefighter not sure. And it does raise the stress levels unnecessarily.
So, it does.
Yes.
It does.
Well, Chief, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it, and I'm sure that people will get a lot out of this and learn more about how to keep their apparatus on the road and maintain these high-tech, complex, multi-million-dollar or multi-hundred-thousand-dollar apparatus on the road. So.
Right. Pretty soon we'll be into the millions, Ed.
Yeah, we're close there now.
We are close.
Right. Well, Chief, thank you very much for your time. I greatly appreciate it, and
you're welcome.
Our listeners do as well. So,
you're welcome.
You, sir.
All right.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.